Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Wake up to something different on Sunday mornings by joining me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz. The finest in modern jazz, from hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz every Sunday morning at 9 on Sheffield Live. 93.2 FM.
Unsigned, the show bringing you music made by unsigned artists in the Sheffield Live area. I'm Peter Brooks, and every Wednesday afternoon from 1 till 2, I'll be playing you music from the local scene, both recorded and live studio guests. Unsigned on Sheffield Live.
Why not join us for
the Susie
and Sheridan
Show
on Sheffield
Live Radio
93.2
FM, live on the wireless. Oh, never buy teeth from a catalogue.
Every Thursday,
1 till 2 in the afternoon, so I'll get the kettle on for you and put an extra digestive on the plate.
The Susie
and Sheridan
Show.
Hi, I'm Sam Hindley.
And I'm James Fagan.
Every Friday morning, it's our great pleasure to present Thank Goodness It's Folk.
Sheffield's one of the fastest growing hubs of folk music in the country. It's a thrilling city to live in. We try and bring that buzz to you every week with the best in new releases, interviews, and live performances from folk musicians passing through Sheffield.
2 hours of the best folk music from the UK and beyond.
So join us on Sheffield Live every Friday from 10 a.m. for Thank Goodness It's Folk.
Write Radio is the place for writers like you and writing like yours.
Is it like this every time?
Every Friday afternoon, we give a platform to plays,
in the bag,
stories,
dark magic,
poetry, and comedy.
That says family values to me.
We also speak to local authors, woo-hoo! Performers, directors, and promoters about the art and practicalities of bringing writing to life. Send your writing to writeradio@sheffieldlive.org or tune in to Write Radio every Friday afternoon, 1 till 3.
Have you heard? The local talent show is now on every Friday, 4 till 5. Sheffield is absolutely brimming over with singer-songwriters, bands, musicians, amazing talent, and we're going to showcase exactly what they can do. That's on the local talent show, Fridays, 4 till 5, here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. Have you heard? There's a new popular live science show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. From superfoods to supernovae, we'll talk about it. With the latest science news, debate and guests, stick it in your diary. Live science every Saturday morning at 11 a.m.
All aboard! The night train!
Sunday night at 9 p.m. it's the night train.
A non-stop musical journey, taking in music from around the globe.
Funk, soul, rock and roll.
Latin scorchers. Scratchy 78s.
Deep gospel, Delta blues.
Heavyweight dub. Psychedelic nuggets. And a whole lot more.
The night train, Sundays 9 p.m. here on Sheffield Live.
My name is Fruitland, your check is in the mail, Jackson, and you're listening to Sheffield Live 93.2 FM.
drama, comedy, stories, poetry. This is Right Radio.
Hello and welcome to Right Radio, your weekly platform for new writing in Sheffield and beyond, maybe as far as Doncaster. Even further today. We're stretching the limits. Yes, it is Poetry Week, and I am the producer, Andrew Tildersley. Hello. Renee, I think, is on her way. Says is, I think, ill or working. And I'm also joined by Lee Moore. Hello, Lee.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Lee, the host of Tales of Whatever.
And it, well, one host of Tales of Whatever.
Yeah. And a general storytelling, spoken word in comedy enthusiast.
I like to turn my hand to a number of things.
Cool. So Lee will be an interviewee in our second hour. It's a two-hour show. How exciting. And also dry run for hosting.
Yeah.
See how it goes. So in this hour, we are going to hear a selection of poems and stories and interviews. So first, we'll have a poem by Greg Lean called Scratch Cards. Then an interview with Sango Fideji Omoteo, whose name I hope I pronounced right, who's written a collection of short stories we will be talking about. And then that will be followed by a short story sent to us by Dave R. Lee called Big Breath on the Collapse of a State Vector in a Shared Freezer. And that's read by Joy Wright, friend of the show. And then after that, another interview with Tolu Akinyemi. Again, apologies if I pronounced that wrong. To talk about his essays and writing in general. And yeah, exciting stuff. That's just the first hour. Good gravy.
Sounds good.
I know. So in the second hour, we will hear another poem, Soldier Boy by Graham Marshall. Then be speaking to Lee about Tales of Whatever and more. ... And then a story by Kath Allwood called Fledgling, and we'll finish up hopefully with as comprehensive as we can manage poetry and spoken word listings, possibly not including Off the Shelf. It's big, just get a program, like, you know what it is.
Seems fair, they've got lots of advertising around.
Just pick up a program, it's not that hard. It's online as well. Shouldn't have to do everything for you.
And the more you find out things for yourself, the more you enjoy them.
Exactly, yeah. But listen to Lee. Okay, so we're going to start off the show with a poem, as mentioned, Scratch Cards by Greg Lean. And this is read by Sam Birch.
The pound, gold and heavy, worn soft and worn by your fretting, nestles heavy in your pocket as you wait. The corner shop door jingling in your wake. Behind, clear plastic divides. The coloured card grins and boasts of money it will never redeem. You've never met a winner. Not in this town. Or if you have, being washed up here was enough to dispel the sense that they had ever been something, that they had ever had worth of more than the average rate. It's a middling place, where no one achieves much more or less than y'all have grown to expect. And we tut and resent the risk and the flutter, the brief sparkling flame of hope. Don't dream your life away. There are better ways to waste it, both strangers and friends seem to say. We've never met a winner, or no win ever stays, and yet here we are.
Sorry about that, listeners. That ended abruptly and surprised me. As much as it pains me to say it, let's go to some music.
Failing, who's coming up on the left-hand side?
And the sound of Tom Robinson being faded into the distance means the technical glitch is all over, and I have managed to sort out the phone interview. So hopefully on the line, I should have, I hope I'm pronouncing the name right, Sango Fideji Omoteo?
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, thank you. And you?
Okay, so welcome to Write Radio. We are a hub for writing, and you are a writer. You've got a short story collection coming out soon, is that right?
Yes, I do.
Do you want to tell us a bit more about what those stories are about and the inspiration behind them?
So, the collection of short stories is titled I Sell Stories. It's a collection of 5 short stories, and the stories actually address different issues. One addresses the issue of abuse on women in their marriages. Another of the stories addresses a couple who have waited so long to have a child, and when they finally had a child of their own, the child has a medical condition that strains their relationship. Another story is titled With Love, Zoe, and it talks about two men who meet and discuss about a woman they both mutually love as well. So it's a mix of different stories. No one story is the same. And the inspiration behind the collection was that I just wanted to tell stories that are usually untold, and I wanted to make a bold move. There were pressing issues in my art, and I really just had this urge and need to actually write so that people can read about them and address the issues.
Yeah. So do you have any kind of personal inspirations, like other writers who you think are kind of doing that kind of thing, even individuals who've made you think this is my way of making a difference?
I'm inspired by different writers. I grew up reading Wole Soyinka and Daniel Steele, and I especially liked the way Daniel Steele addressed everyday life issues. I am also inspired by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie because she's bold with her writing. I like how she reads the stories and makes it seem real. I love relatable stories, and that inspires me all the time.
Yeah. I think there's something about storytelling, isn't there, that you can tell people facts about, I don't know how hard your life might be, but if... it's often difficult for people to take on board those facts just as facts, like statistics or whatever. They can tell a story in some way, but if you can weave that into a narrative, it transforms it and makes something people can identify with, even if that story doesn't relate to the way they live their lives.
Definitely.
And so you're in the UK at the moment. Are you kind of touring around the country to promote the book?
Yes. Currently, there are plans undergoing to go around the UK and also to Nigeria to do a bookstore and meet as many of my readers that I can.
Yeah. And so, at the moment, is your book kind of, is it online or is it in bookstores, or how can people get hold of it?
So, it's on Amazon, amazon.com.co.uk. Amazon.co.ca, and there are plans on the way to have it available online. So by next week, it would be on Kindle, it would be on Okada Books, it would be available on Barnes & Noble as well, for anyone who wants to just walk in and grab a copy.
Yeah, so people have got no excuse. They can get hold of it. And also, the great thing about kind of selling through Amazon, as much as it'd be nice if they paid their taxes, is you can keep track of kind of your sales, and are you in contact with your readers? Are you aware of the kind of readership that you've got?
Yes, I do know that a lot of young people enjoy reading my stories, because coming from a background where people don't like talking about uncomfortable situations, People don't want to talk about abuse. People are not comfortable talking about medical conditions. So my stories make a difference in that I'm talking from a point of view that is relatable, and also because it encourages people to speak their own truth, because my truth doesn't have to be your truth, and doesn't make my truth less valid than yours. It's about getting everybody to express their own point of view, to express their own pain, and to encourage people to let them know that their feelings and their pain is valid.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And it also, I think, people that have tried writing their own truth or tried writing at all, it takes some courage. Like, it is quite nerve-wracking putting yourself on paper and also to then share with people. Is this something that's come easily to you, or have you really tried to fight to kind of force yourself to speak your truth?
Writing comes easily to me. I've always written for as long as I have known, and because I am an introvert by nature, so I kind of see things in retrospective. I write because I don't have anything else to do than to write. Mm-hmm. So usually when I just grab a pen or I sit on the keyboard, I'm pouring out my art the way it comes into my head, uncensored. So I don't try to sugarcoat the truth. I just see it the way I see it and the way it is. And I think that is important in getting to hear the truth, actually. I think it's important to put your heart and your soul into it. So writing comes to me so easily. I get inspired on the bus. I practically get inspired everywhere. So if I'm not even close to a laptop, I just type away on my phone or I scribble on paper. I write every day, every time, and wherever the inspiration comes in.
Yeah. So often in this show, we ask people for their advice for listeners that might be thinking about starting to write, or, you know, they're nervous about taking a next step towards publishing or anything like that. Clearly, creativity is not a struggle for you. That's bubbling up. But I guess you'd advise people to have something to write on for a start. But what other advice might you give?
I always advise upcoming writers to read as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Because when you read, it also opens up your mind to the different kind of writing styles that there are, and it usually serves as some sort of inspiration. And also, I advise writers to just write the way they think, not really bother about whether or not what you're writing is going to be acceptable. Because whether you like it or not, not everyone is going to probably accept your story, and that's okay, you know, but it's just important to know that whatever it is you're writing, there's a readership for it, and it is just important to write the way you feel, you know, unfiltered as well. So writing as much as you can as well, the more you write, the better you get at it. It's the same thing about practice making something better. So I would advise you to read. I would advise you to write as much as you can.
Yeah, I think that's great. But it is like building a muscle, isn't it? It's going to the gym, you know, writing all the time. Even if what you write isn't your best work, or isn't even objectively that great, it's working that muscle.
Yeah, exactly.
Another topic we've discussed on this show in the past is writing in different languages. So I don't know, do you always write in English?
So I mainly write in English, but then I also weave in a bit of my language, which is Yoruba. It's one of the Nigerian languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So even though it's predominantly in English, you would still find words that are from my culture.
Yeah, yeah. And is that, so there's a creativity to that as well, where you have countries with lots of languages potentially, but maybe one common language like English, where you can kind of have a real creative interplay between different languages with borrowed words coming into English or leaving English. So is there a kind of special, are there things you can say in a sort of Nigerian idiom that you couldn't say in other cultures?
Thing about translation is sometimes when you translate, you actually don't feel the power of the emotion that the writing is meant to convey.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when I struggle and between whether to translate it or not, if I feel the translation doesn't convey what I really wanted to convey, then I just stick to putting the exact language the way it is, and then the English translation follows. So it doesn't matter who is reading, you would still understand what I'm saying because it flows into the story.
Yeah.
And I do it in such a way that you don't have to probably Google the meaning before you understand. So it doesn't interrupt the flow of the story. It doesn't interrupt your reading pace. You just continue reading in a way that you actually don't realize that there's a mix of languages.
Yeah, yeah. No, I really love that when you read a word and you don't really know what it means, but the context around it, you're kind of like, I think I know what that is. And it sort of enriches your linguistic world. And I love it when words do slip across from one language to another. And it enriches the culture. It gives you another way of seeing the world and describing the world.
Exactly. Because some of the readers I've read as well who have used different languages, for example, I enjoy reading Pali Dosseini, and sometimes it puts in like a bit of his own language, and it just opens up your world into seeing different cultures and different lifestyles. So I think that's really good, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get back to your short story anthology. So what's it called?
It's called Our Eyes Tell Our Stories.
Sorry, say that again. The line's not great.
Our Eyes Tell Our Stories.
Grand. And people can get it on Amazon at the moment and soon other outlets?
Yes, soon they'll be able to read it on Kindle, Amazon Kindle. It would be on Google Books as well, iTunes, and it would also be on Okada Books. All from next week.
Yeah. And how much does it cost?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
And how much does it cost?
So it costs £10.
£10, grand. That sounds bargainous to me, I'd say. Yeah, I think I'll go for Kindle. I'm very into ebooks at the moment. There's something about not having to fill an entire room with books, but you've still got all that information and knowledge potentially there, but at least it's just something super slim rather than all these piles of books staring at you going, why haven't you read me yet?
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. Grant, well, thanks very much for talking to us. And good luck with the book launch.
Yeah, thank you, and it's been nice being on your show.
Great. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.
There we are. So, yeah, that was Sango for Deji or Mateo. Or Tomeo. Have I written that down wrong? Oh, no. Sorry. Lee, you were kind of left out of that conversation slightly.
That's all right. I think it was really interesting to sit and listen to.
Any thoughts?
While I
queue up the next story.
Thank you. I just think it's fascinating. I love the idea. I'm a big fan of short stories and short story collections. I think it can be quite intimidating to pick up a big doorstop of a book and go, this is all one story. Although I do enjoy those too. I do quite enjoy the variety of that a short story collection can sort of bring. I think one of my favourites is, have you ever read the Illustrated Man? Which is a very unusual.
One of my terrible habits is going into charity shops, reading the back of science fiction pulpy paperbacks, and then just flicking through and looking and kind of sort of flicking to the start, like, are those sort of the characters? And then going, right, with my right thumb, I can estimate where the the exposition drop is, where you find out what the story is all about. Okay, that's that. And then how does it end? All right, cool.
Just missing out all the stuff in between.
Exactly. So I've sort of flick read The Illustrated Man.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the short story. For science fiction, I think it's really great, but also where it's sort of cultures or worlds that you're not familiar with, because there's so much world building in just a handful of sentences. Mm. So, like, you get these fat fantasy trilogies where each book is a million words long, and you're like, oh, I like being immersed in a strange world, but God, do you have to take that long over it? But a short story is like the man held the Gazongle calculator in his left hand. Ah, oh, this is a world where Gazongle calculators exist. That's not a great example. Don't use that in your writing.
The Gazongle, no, it's there. I'm going to use it now.
But yeah, there's a lot to recommend the short story. And I think if it's a culture that you're not familiar with, it's a great way of kind of getting a snapshot of that world.
Yeah, so that's getting an entry point.
Lee's gone quiet because you can see that I've queued up a story. So you are listening to Write Radio, a platform for writing for people in and around Sheffield. And we have still an interview coming up soon with Tolu Akinyemi to talk about their anthology of writing and essays. But now we're going to go to a short story, and this is On the Collapse of a State Vector in a Shared Freezer by Dave R. Lee.
She wished the cat had never shown her the holes in space-time. Of course, she'd started it all with the midnight convergence of quantum theory and frozen peas, an overlap that involved her kneeling on the kitchen liner, black hair lank from the rain, back from the pub and starving, pondering the mysteries of quantum indistinguishability. Frozen peas all looked the same. How to tell which pack is hers and which Clarissa's? In a bolt of pure insight, it came to her that frozen peas are macroscopic quantum objects, truly indistinguishable and subject to the wonky laws of the quantum realm. This flash was to change everything. It started with that weird business of the disposable lighters, followed by Dinger chasing things that she couldn't see, things about 6 centimetres across that rolled through the air. Crazy cat, she'd muttered. What can you see that I can't? But the next day she'd seen one too, a mirror-silvered sphere, and she saw something crawl out of it, something snaky and silver, which the cat tore into with wild hissing. He'd been missing for 2 days now, worryingly long even for such an adventure as Tom. If only she could turn back the clock to Tuesday. She lay, unsleeping, worrying about her imminent finals, the missing cat, and snaky things that came out of space-time holes. The cat plops back into normal space-time, right in front of a monster. The fox has blazing infrared eyes, a stink that could knock a house over, and fur raised in a crackling purple aura. The cat has a perfunctory bowel movement and then leaps in a straight line 8 times his own length to the letterbox and flows, bones fluid, joints dislocated through, reassembling himself on the other side. Unfortunately, the other side of the slot is bound by a box of sturdy steel grid, the wires about 1 inch apart. Dinger is too exhausted to teleport or warp again, so he sends out a beam of influence to get next door's dog to go mental. 2 seconds later, the barking wakes both households. Tanya sat up at the uproar, her heart pounding. She slipped on a dressing gown and tiptoed into the darkened hallway. From the kitchen came a squawk and then a plaintive meow. Dinger was trapped in the mailbox, looking embarrassed. She opened the steel grid, laughing, and then noticed the blood and the torn ear. Dinger was shaken, but rather proud of his new adventures. He'd slipped through a wormhole 3 days back into the past to enjoy Sunday's leftover salmon mousse again. But he'd met Sunday's version of himself, and they'd had a fight, resulting in Wednesday Cat gaining a few mouthfuls of the delicacy at the expense of a nasty slash to the ear. He hopped onto Tanya's bed and looked down at her. Later, restored by some purring, he would do his super-heavy sleep, teleporting a few specks of neutronium from the Sen X3 pulsar to spread through his flesh. She woke late, a weight like that of a large man pressing down on her. She shifted herself out from under the heavy cat, sat up, and stroked his head. How could he have fitted himself through the letterbox? Overcome with curiosity, she got up and fetched a pair of calipers from the toolbox under the stairs. Dingo was so deeply asleep, he let her measure his head. 7.5 by 8 centimetres. She went, yawning, to make breakfast and measure the letterbox. The slot was 4.5 centimetres deep. Dingo had temporarily shrunk his head to 3/5 of its size. She finished her cereal and opened a tin of tuna. Behind her, a little voice said, "Now," and she glanced around, noticing the bedroom door was shut and a small silver ball hovered at the end of the cat's fluffy tail. As Dinger picked at those fish flakes, Tanya spotted a note stuck to the fridge door. In angry capitals, it declared, "Those flipping peas were mine!" That evening, Tanya had 2 bottles of Merlot ready when Clarissa got back, and they made up over a couple of glasses. Tanya opened up to a flatmate about the recent weirdness, and Clarissa, literature student, told her about a story by George Luis Borges. Telon is a world two blokes discover in an encyclopedia, a world with weird laws that start leaking into our world, said Clarissa. You start to believe in that the quantum world can sort of leak over into this one. She leaned forward with drunken emphasis. I think this quantum stuff is your Telon. Tanya mused. A second uncertainty principle at the level of human perception. If 2 things appear to be identical, they are. They're part of the quantum world. And, continued Clarissa, Borges writes about unobserved things creating copies of themselves, called Hronia. Tanya nodded. I counted the lighters in the place on Wednesday. We had 2. Thursday, it was 14. Clarissa raised a finger, laughing. That must be how come rich people are so lucky with money. Money is indistinguishable and creates Hronia, so the more of it you have, the more of it you get. They were both laughing now. Behind them, Dingo was facing into a large wormhole that hovered a couple of inches above the floor. He was smelling something huge and ugly, and it was trying to get through. He inflated his tail and hissed. He had a new weapon, something very hot he'd found in the corona of a G-type star. The alien snake began to emerge, but the cat spat fizzing bolts of thermonuclear plasma, melting it into a greasy puddle on the liner. Their attention drawn to the sputtering and crackling sounds and the sudden wave of heat, the 2 women turned to see Dinger licking gobs of silver fat off his silky ginger paws. He said.
And that was On the Collapse of a State Vector in a Shared Freezer by Dave R. Lee, read by Joy Wright.
I always like to hear about terrifying cats. I just assume that cats are going to rule the world at some point. So
I think give them an inch or interdimensional powers and they'll take a mile.
It's the end of everything.
Yeah. I've turned myself down too much because I turned my headphones up too much. Listeners don't need to know that, but I'm saying it out loud anyway.
Behind the curtain.
Yeah, you are listening to Right Radio on Sheffield Live, and I am Andrew Tildersley, the producer, who doesn't normally get behind a mic, so you can see what's going wrong here. And with me is Lee Moore.
Hello there.
Who is, I guess this is your debut hosting, apparently.
It is, yes.
Yeah,
it is.
And Renee and Cez, who are normally on this week's team, which is the spoken word team, are otherwise indisposed. But I'm sure they'll be back soon. So what's coming up on the show in the next hour? We've got a poem, Soldier Boy, by Graham Marshall. We've got Lee Moore will be telling us about Tales or Whatever. And then we'll have a short story by Cathal Wood called Fledgling, as well as the listings. But still in this hour, we've got another interview with Tolu Akinyemi. Are you there? Oh, that's a buzzing noise. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Ah, fantastic, that's much better. Super, well, good to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be at the show as well. I've been looking forward to it.
Fantastic. So, you are from Nigeria originally?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, and you've written, I think, 4 books so far?
Five books now.
God.
Yeah.
Have you done another one in the week since I last? So, yeah. Do you want to tell us about what sort of writing you do?
Yeah. So I've written 5 books, and out of the 5 books, the first book was a poetry collection titled "Dead Lions Don't Roar," a collection of inspiring and motivating modern day verses. And after that, I wrote a collection of inspirational and motivational essays titled "Unravel Your Hidden Gems." As we all know, everyone has hidden gems that we need to unravel, and that has every story, has different stories about life, about relationships, everything that encompasses our human race, career, leadership, business development, and just to unravel those hidden gems and, you know, hold life by the, you know, just to run your race and do your best. And after that, I wrote the follow-up in the poetry collection. I called it the collection of poetic wisdom for the discerning, and that was "Dead Dogs Don't Bark and They Don't Bite," and it was just a follow-up on "Dead Lions Don't Roar," that we all have our unique bark. We should try and make a difference in the world, and with various themes about our day-to-day life and everything, you know, just it. And after that, the fourth one was titled "Dead Cats Don't Meow," which was the end of the trilogy for "Dead Lions Don't Roar, Dead Dogs Don't Bark." So I wrote "Dead Cats Don't Meow, Don't Waste the Nightlife." That came out early this year, around April, and I had book tours, readings in Nigeria, Lagos, Nigeria, in Newcastle, and in London as well. Yeah. So I've, and more recently, I wrote a new poetry collection titled "Never Play Games with the Devil," which is the latest in my works. And currently I have a short story collection that I'm writing at the minute, but that will not be due for release until next year.
And has that got a title at the moment?
Yeah, what, pardon?
And the work in progress, has that got a title yet?
No title at the minute. I'm still playing with different titles on my idea, so no title at the minute.
And so your book's mostly poetry, and then you've got that book of essays. What,
yes.
What's your first love? How did you come to writing?
I would say, yeah, my first love initially, I came to writing via the route of reading. I used to read quite a lot. I would read a newspaper in and out. I would read journals, and so it was in form of a transition from being a reader to journaling, then I transitioned into a writer. So after that, I started the personal development blog, where I used to write a lot of different articles on personal development and motivation. And from there, I felt, I could do this, like just publish a book and let people have something lasting, that just create a lasting impression out there and get my works into the hands of people. So initially, I didn't start out to be like, to have to be a published author, but along the line I found my own unique roar, my own unique voice, and I felt like why not give this a go. So that's how the transition has been. But my first love in relation to writing, I would say it would be between inspiring people and poetry as well, because I just love, you know, poetry, short burst of words, being able to send powerful messages across to people without having to read like 100,000 words or in 10 lines, in 14 lines. I could like make fantastic impact and pass my message across here. So
yeah.
I love poetry for the short burst of words.
Exactly. I was sort of going to go on to say, what, you know, what's the magic of poetry? And I think that's part of it, isn't it? That you can find a lot of people that have committed to memory, you know, learned by heart certain poems because they mean so much, but like, you know, yeah, just a handful of lines really, like you're reading into them a lot of the meaning.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, that's the magic of poetry. Last night I was in I was in a spoken word night, and you know, performing poetry, and you know, even performing without holding the book at hand is actually part of the magic of poetry as well. Being able to metamorphose from just an author, but being able to like embrace other aspects in the journey, performance, poetry, reading, you know, so you could just, one could, you know, you could play with every aspect as well, not just being the published writer. At times I go for author talks, engage people as well, inspire people that they also can do this as well. If Tolu Akinyemi can do it, then why not you? There's basically no difference. The only difference is that someone has just chosen to like put their gifts and talent to use, and so that's what I'll just encourage people as well, that you can also do this in a better way.
I think you can inspire by your writing, but yeah, you also inspire by deed. So do you performance poetry as well?
Yes, I do performance poetry.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any kind of personal inspirations, like people that you look to as great examples of how to do that?
Yeah, we have quite a lot of, you know, renowned Nigerian authors. We have Nobel laureate for the same. Kyle is also a poet, and, you know, he has been like a great one to look at. I used to read a lot of Chinua Achebe's books while growing up as well, and these were like great inspiration. So in Nigeria, we have so many like literary icons and giants that I read their books in the past while growing up, and I felt like I never ever imagined I would ever become a published author. But I guess that's the way life works, from reading and having great interest in like books, and you know, even like just that piqued my interest, and from there the rest, as they say, is history. But yeah, we had like so many icons. What is it? I feel like a great example of even until the current times. It inspires lots of young people by bringing out more works and just, you know, doing what he knows how to do best. Yeah, so yeah, we have and those are people that I looked up to while growing up, reading their books, and hoping that someday I would also leave my own imprint on the sands of time.
And so for any listeners who are at various stages of their writing career, so some will just be thinking about that they'd like to be writers, others will be kind of aiming to try and get published, or to find somebody to publish them. Have you got any advice?
Yeah, my advice is that along the line, you don't have to start out as the best writer or being an award-winning writer. It doesn't really have to work that way for all authors, but I would say you would grow, you would evolve. So the first book might not be all great, all excellent, but as you make yourself open to reading, to writing more, and exercising those writing muscles, you would definitely get better at what you do. And just see feedback as a positive thing as well. So when you get feedback on your work, it's not that doesn't like me, or you know. So at times we take like negative feedback. So writers or authors may tend to take it, you know, badly, but see it as a way to grow in the process. If there are, you know, feedbacks are not good, that would help you to improve on your art and your craft, and yeah, just take it on board, work on it, and so. But see writing as, the more you write, the more you get better. And don't say, I don't read books, I don't have time. You always need to make time for the things you love to do. So if you're passionate about writing as well, try as much as possible to read books far and wide across genre. So do not limit yourself to a certain genre, but just make yourself open to new ideas, open to new thought processes and culture and way of thinking as well.
Yeah, and so from going from reading anything and everything growing up, what sort of, do you have any kind of writers that really inspire you now?
Right now I would say Wole Soyinka still remains top of my list, and we have quite a lot of Nigerian writers as well. We have Olashunemi, who wrote The Secret Lives of Obaseki's Wives. We have Ayobami Adebayo still with me. We have Oyinkan Braithwaite. And so we have a lot of young people coming through, you know, in Nigeria as well. And in the world as well, we have quite, in poetry, there's Ari Singh and quite a lot of other people that are doing really well, you know, making a difference and doing phenomenally well. And I feel like I'm also on that path. Everywhere I go with my books, I've been having quite a lot of good feedback, and it's been really good, either with the books themselves or for performance poetry. The feedback has been encouraging, and it's been really good, and these are really good for me. The fact that there are other people inspiring people in my generation that I look up to, and people now see me as someone who can also inspire them to do better, inspire them in their arts and in their craft as well.
Yeah, and in terms of being an inspiration, am I right in thinking that your book sales, money from that also goes to charity?
Yes. So from Deadline Stone Road, I donated £1,000 to Age UK Northumberland, and that was just to support their loneliness campaign. In the region, we had quite a lot of old people who are lonely, they have no friends and people to talk to, people to rely on. And I felt like through the sale of my books, I could like make a difference to the community, to my local communities as well. So I tried to support them and donated £1,000 to the charity, and that was really helpful for them and timely. And currently I'm still working towards supporting two other charities, Equal Arts, the Creative Arts Charity, and also the Chronicle Sunshine Fund. They provide equipment to children that obviously the NHS can't provide here. So through the sale of my books, I'm just trying to encourage and see how I can be the plug, you know, just supporting local communities and making a difference, basically, while I still have that unique role, while I still have my voice. And so just trying to do good deeds and roaring in my own fantastic way.
Mm-hmm. And are you currently in the country sort of touring around, performing, sort of sharing?
Yeah, so I'm presently I come in between London and Newcastle, so I do quite a lot of events, London, Newcastle. I've done book tours earlier this year, and I have upcoming tours as well lined up, hopefully early 2020. So it's just in the pipeline, and I'll be doing a cross-country tour, just, you know, talking about the books, doing readings, and taking, you know, author talks, questions, and all of that. Yeah, so I have all of that shit in the pipeline.
Grand. And if people want to get hold of your 5 books currently, where can they find them? Who were they published by?
Yeah, so I have the books on Amazon. It's also available on Waterstones, so on all Amazon marketplaces, on Waterstones, on Barnes and Noble. I also have it on my website, tolutoludo.com, so TOLUTOLUDO.com. I also have it on Ocala Books and a whole host of websites. So when a lot of online stores, Book Depository and the like. Yeah, so once you just find the book title, The Lionstone Road, Dead Dogstone Park, Dead Catstone Meow, Unravel Your Hidden Gems, and Never Play Against the Devil, it's all available online, and you could just cut it everywhere. Yeah, so it's fantastic poetry read, light verses, and that would definitely, you know, leave you, you know, thinking of what would I be doing next? How do I find my own unique voice, my own role, and make a difference? Yeah, so that's it, basically.
And for our listeners, do you have any key words of wisdom, key bits of advice to leave them kind of with a inspiration in their heart to go away and not necessarily to write, to do anything that's kind of positive and will improve their lives?
Well, I would say maybe that would... I think the best thing I would tell them, I would just read a poem from Never Play Games to the Devil to close that off. So, and that poem is titled Roots. Take a listen.
Oh, sorry.
See life from the spectacles of growth. Grow. We don't stop learning. Don't hold back. Live free and intentional. Unravel all your hidden gems and diamonds. Even more so, glow. You are a work in progress. an unfinished article. Write your name out in gold. Be bold. Don't come to the parade ground lax. The pity party host in my neighborhood was a no-show. Show up. Audition for it. Just do it. Thank you.
Yeah, sound advice. Yep, yep. Our listeners have been told. No excuses. Just do it. Get on with it. I mean, stay to the end of the show, but like, then get on with it.
Yeah, just do it. That's the message. Just do it. Find your own unique role, your own voice, and just do it. Live your dreams.
And I think you're a living example of how that can work out.
Yes.
Brilliant.
I try my best to balance every aspect of my life, both my, you know, the auto part and every area of my life, and just to be the best version of myself possible.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for talking to us, Tolu.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you and goodbye.
Bye.
Well, that was jolly inspiring.
Yeah, I love that image of the, you know, yourself as a work in progress that you're not finished yet.
Yeah,
I've always liked that. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's literally true.
And it is also literally true.
Yeah, super. Well, I think there's probably time to go for a bonus story. So,
if sounds good.
If you're up for this, let's go to London Road by Aya Gabardo.
Maybe the street sweeper missed them. Maybe it was fresh, just thrown away fresh. But there it is, the litter of London Road. I would watch my step through the crumpled soda cans, broken beer bottles, tattered fish and chips boxes still reeking with vinegar, and the shrunken filters, stepped on or crushed, often stained with lipstick and full gradient scale. If I didn't look up and round, it would seem like walking down my old Makati Avenue with its own stupendous Friday night litter. This is London Road. This is Sheffield in South Yorkshire. The city of seven hills. The steel city. And I came as malleable as a strip of rolling steel under fire, not really knowing what I'd be. And there it is, right in its busy belly, this intoxicating road. I dug my calloused feet deep, unknowingly destined to make a home in the corner of Keaton's Hill. The road spills to the town center at one end, while at the fork at the other, it squirms through a Middle Eastern community, then drops down, then on and on until it becomes Chesterfield Road. The other kind of that fork road turns to the antique block of Abbeydale Road, that teems with craft boutiques and themed cafes, all hipster and so now in the ancient collectible row. There they are, the signature scents in the dizzying national restaurants on this road. The whiffs of Pakistani kebab and Dubai cafe pastries mark the busy Boston Street intersection. Heading down, a scrumptious maze of Jamaican oxtail stew, Japanese miso mingling with wasabi, then Greek grilled steaks make the always cold English air. The lone fish and chip shop in that short stretch reminds me that I'm in England. Then right in my corner is the Chinese stir-fried everything. Further down, the aroma shifts to Thai curry, Vietnamese pho, Turkish baklava, Indian roti, and more Chinese stir-fried takeaways. All these landmark scents map out the road on its own. Each an aromatic corpuscle breathing life into the filth of the dead. And it's all over this road. The dead. Like the desolate homeless sitting among the pavement litter. There he is, strategically next to the Sainsbury cash machine up that busy corner. Under a camouflaged jacket with tattered sleeves, is bundled in layers of shirts, the topmost a gray shirt that could have been really white, or brown, or blue, but looks gray now in the filth. They're all oversized, just like his cargo pants, clumping and collecting little bits of trash in the folds of his squat. He sits there on sunny days, or rainy and gloomy days. He sits there every day in the fickle range of 4 to 15 degree air. his hand extended for a pence to spare. He sits on an even grimier pavement at night, tactically next to the 24/7 Osman supermarket down the road, where he haggles with the passing pub crowd for as long as he can in the freezing wee store hours. If not for the grimy, greasy, crawling lines of his beaten face, he could easily be a drunken bassist after an exhilarating gig at the Old Crown Inn, with a too enthusiastic crowd begging for more. Those camouflaged arms could be lugging his still-hot bass, looking like the perfect rock star, if not for his grimy frown lines. There they are, these loud moments in London Road. It could get boisterously loud with timed noises. The scratch of the street sweeper at 5 in the morning, the rumble of the buses and steady stream of cars at 6 till midnight, all on the wrong side of the road to me. The sneezing brakes of delivery lorries alternating at 10 in the morning and 5 in the afternoon. And the thunderous voices of these tottering drunks, sometimes in an actual brawl, as early as 8 in the evening, running through the wee hours of the morning. Weekends? Oh, weekends blare with its own timed sounds, often crescendoing with one too many wailing police sirens and ambulances. It quiets down only on Sunday early mornings. And there it is, above the din, the grumbling dead of this road. The junkies hang by the Turkish barber shop in the corner, or those small parks behind the stretch, their pointy noses still powdered from sniffs in the shadows of the previous night. There she is too, another dead soaking in the sun on a patch of grass under the thinning maple tree behind the Cremon. Her blonde hair tangled and loosely falling on her fading denim jacket as she stretches out her bony bare legs. She'd quietly drink her canned beer until I settled down on a bench on the other side of the small park. She would stagger up to me as crookedly as her lips, cursing about an effing lunatic, or the effing itch in her legs, or the effing pigeons, or any effing something. She turns meeker and meeker each step as she takes closer to me, then sweetly asks, "Darling, got 60p on you?" And I would firmly shake my head and mumble an apology. She doesn't get it, even after a couple of refusals in the past. Maybe she doesn't remember at all. If not for her wasted eyes, she could easily be a doting mother of two playing in that park under the same sun. She could be chasing them on those same bony, itchy legs around the tree, if not for her wasted eyes. There it is, too. The fallen lumber of the dead of this road. The regular pedestrians heading to work down the road, or to the universities on either side of the road, or to eat in one of the restaurants here. Caught up in their own everyday living, they catatonically tread past the rotting remnants of the dead of this road. And here I am, one of them dead. I didn't